Welcome into another edition of Football 52 with UNC head football coach Ed Lamb. I am Brady Hull. This is episode number 22. That's my favorite number, coach. I know you care about this. I wore the number 22 when I played high school football. So that's a big thing, big story.
First thing that comes to mind, I was number 44.
So I don't know. Okay.
All right. I want to imply that you were half of me.
Well, when you're sitting here doing a podcast across from a guy that coaches at a high level, I feel that way sometimes. So I'm glad you say it out loud. Now we know where everybody stands.
We're in your venue. As you say that, I should, we have every number, unless there's a number retired, we have a player representing every number of these episodes, and I should probably shout out to each guy.
That would be actually a unique idea.
The problem is I'm the worst at numbers. Like I know a player's like the shape of him in pads and what the body type is. I so rarely know the numbers. In fact, I have to have a coach with me prior to the game because the officials always want to know, okay, what number is your snapper? What number are the five guys up on the line of scrimmage in the PAT and the field goal? And so they're always asking these numbers, and I so rarely know the guys by their numbers.
That used to be my thing back in the day. I used to know the numbers, and that's like, I don't do this anymore, but passwords to all my stuff would always be a player's number or a combination of those. I used to be really good at that. I don't know where I lost it, but now with guys being able to wear whatever number they want to in the NFL especially, I'm just all over the place with it. It just doesn't mean as much as it used to.
I think of my favorite players in any sport, I really don't know their numbers. I don't know if it's just the way my mind – I can go through the Oakland A's when I was in high school and probably still name the nine guys in the starting lineup by name. I have no idea what number any of them were.
That's how I feel now, but I can go back to the first two Super Bowl years the Broncos had, and I could list probably 20 of those numbers and feel pretty good about it. But now, like the current roster for the Broncos, especially with changing numbers, boy, that's a tough one. That's a completely different thing now.
We're getting into some stuff here. Maybe there's an inherent reason why I ended up being an English major and other people are more into numbers.
That deal with the numbers. Yeah, the numbers is a struggle. The math side is a tough thing too. We were joking a little bit before we pressed record. They say late June, July is always kind of a slow time in sports. I got to tell you, it has not been that way this year. We've got a lot of news in the NCAA. Of course, being able to go over some of these pro teams, we got two MVPs in the state, so that's been big. But it seems like every time I refresh something with the NCAA, yesterday, and we'll talk about this too, the Mario Chalmers story I think is fascinating. And then we got this a week or so ago, the NCAA Division I Council voted Tuesday to remove, how do you say, cannabinoids? Is that how we say it? Cannabinoids?
Yep, cannabinoids.
That's like the official name from the banned drug class for NCAA championships and postseason football effective immediately. Essentially, that means marijuana is being legalized?
Well, it's interesting that you read it that way.
Yeah.
I had to have this discussion with some folks on our campus because I'm a big proponent of testing. If guys are showing signs of struggling in academic areas of their life, social anxiety, I think that's one easy way for us as mentors to rule out something that is dangerous. So here's what the NCAA is actually saying. We test for performance-enhancing drugs. That's the scope of our authority.
Mm-hmm.
Marijuana is not a performance-enhancing drug. So to me right away, I'm like, man, I hope our players see this because this is what we've been telling them.
Yeah.
You are taking a performance detriment
drug
if you are taking marijuana or THC. And basically all drugs would fall into that category. We had one of the nation's, maybe the world's foremost experts on marijuana and sport. He sits on the NFLPA, the National Football League Players Association Council, helped write for several professional leagues, their drug and performance-enhancing policy. He came and spoke to our team in January. Ben Court is his name. He wrote the book Marijuana Inc., as in INC, Incorporated. And he's got a lot of fascinating viewpoints, but he came and spoke to our players, and he goes, look, everything that you put in your body, is it a performance enhancer or a performance detractor? And then our guys, we got smart guys. They're college students, right?
Sure.
So they tested him out. They wanted to know, is this guy just, you know, one of Coach Lamb's lackeys? Is this one of his buddies, or is this guy real, right? And so they start asking, hey, Ben, how about cigarettes? You know, and Ben said, well, you know, cigarettes or nicotine. Nicotine is a performance enhancer. There's no question about it. The problem with nicotine is that we haven't really found a delivery system that doesn't cause cancer at a high rate. So,
yeah.
And the guys were like, oh, okay, this guy's real. And then you're like, how about caffeine? Well, caffeine's definitely a performance enhancer. You know, I mean, he was very honest at every turn about every drug and substance that was brought up. And there were several guys that still hearken back to that night when he spoke to our team in January and say, he opened my eyes about marijuana. I believe, and I've done the research on this, I believe that the pendulum on marijuana swung way too far. It, certainly there was a time when I was growing up with the DARE program and some of that stuff, we were taught that marijuana and heroin and cocaine and everything was in this same category. And the reality is that you know, different substances probably pose different threats to different people and different personalities. But I think marijuana is a particularly sneaky drug, and working with young people this age group, I can see it clearly. It's a drug that initially relieves anxiety, depression, pain, and then as they become a habitual or chronic user, it all of that skyrockets. And any mental health professional, especially those that are working with adolescents right now, will tell you that marijuana is the most dangerous drugs out there for the way that it reshapes the mind. I read the other day. I'm going to put a caveat in here because I may screw up the number, but something like of adolescents experiencing anxiety, depression, 400% they are 400% more likely. Those adolescent chronic smokers or users of THC are 400% more likely to be experiencing anxiety and depression on a clinical level.
Well, and that, you know, you think about that too with a lot of things too. If we're, you know, expanding the conversation even into alcohol, sure, you feel good for a moment or two, but I know from, you know, a lot of people that I've grown up with or been around, you know, it can be fun when you see them for a moment, they're at parties or whatever, and they're drinking alcohol and they seem really happy. Sometimes that's all that is numbing you out for a little bit, and then the anxiety creeps up. And I'm guessing that there's a lot of similarities with that when it comes to marijuana.
So many. And like I said, I just see it. I see it right there on these guys and in their moments where they're more lucid. You know, I think they recognize it right away when you give them the information. And so, yeah, there were some discussions like on campus, because I think the initial reaction when you read this NCAA news is, wow, the NCAA is decriminalizing or moving away from testing for marijuana. Let's be clear. If you've paid any attention to the NCAA, they are running from anything that might put them in a bad light, right? And so their authority, their scope is to test for performance-enhancing drugs. Marijuana is not a performance-enhancing drug. I believe that's more reason why coaches, aunts, uncles, parents, teachers, anyone who's dealing with young people nowadays should be even more vigilant when they see something like this going on. All the NCAA said is, hey, we admit marijuana is not a performance-enhancing drug. Why are some people hearing or reading that as marijuana is okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, no, you opened my eyes. That's a fascinating take, too. What do you make of, and again, you'll hear a lot of, I've heard it a lot with professional players when they were pushing for this, is like it's a pain relief. It's a way of coping with a lot of the pain that comes with playing football, because we've discussed that a lot on this show, how tough of a sport this is. What do you say to that person, to those groups that come in and that's what they're really using?
Excellent question. And this was brought up another question for Ben Court. And, you know, I think the impression of some of our players is, geez, all the guys in the NFL use it. And having been around those players and knowing those guys, I know that's not the case, but they do get a lot of publicity. And those who do use it sometimes want to be upfront about it. They don't want to live a life of underground, you know, holding back information. They want to be upfront. Here's the major difference. And Ben went right to the science. Look, there's a reason why your car insurance starts to drop rates when you get to 25. There's an adolescent brain and then there's an adult brain. And he actually brought out charts and graphs to show the difference in brain structure and decision making between in the adolescent ages up to 25 and then after 25. And marijuana and other drugs actually change your brain structure for the worse and cause clinical depression, anxiety, suicidal thoughts, et cetera, more often in the adolescent brain.
Mm.
And so that's, I think, again, if you're working with young people, if you have a family, if you care about society and adolescence, the future of our society, I don't know how you can't take all drugs, alcohol abuse very seriously and make sure that at least these young people have the information that they need.
Well, and I've always thought of it like this. Marijuana, I mean, for the pain relief people, it's not going to fix anything. You're not going to break an arm and right. then smoke a doobie and suddenly you're like, oh, you know, 4 hours later, I don't have a broken arm anymore. It's going to – it might – I don't know. I've never had it before. I would imagine, yeah, if it does mask the pain for a little bit. But then to me, I would point it back to there's obviously something more severe going on. You probably got to get some kind of medical attention. If you really – if you're saying that you absolutely need to have marijuana – to relieve the pain, and I get it. There are other extenuating circumstances. I know some with, you know, different type of cancers. They'll do that. They'll recommend that. And again, not being a doctor, but when it comes to like physical pain that you're going through because you sustained an injury in sports, I just look at it and go, man, there's probably something bigger going on. And all you're doing is numbing out for a little bit. It's not fixing the problem. Real medical attention is probably advised.
It's. You can tell that when I'm talking about this, I'm passionate about
sure.
it because I see guys throwing away a small window of their life to do something really well that they care about. And that window of time to be a football player is really, really small. Ben Court is passionate about it but trained in a scientific way. And so when that issue came up, well, what about, you know, like appetite? What about helping me sleep? What about pain? He just like very calmly was like, okay, there initially – was some evidence on appetite stimulation, and doctors used to prescribe marijuana or THC. They no longer do that because, and again, pulls up the studies, references it, and says what we're finding now in the scientific community is that initially marijuana is an appetite stimulant, and then it becomes a suppressant. After the wow. introduction of chronic use. So that's the last thing that doctors now want of patients going through cancer treatment. He said, it can make you feel less pain. There are better painkillers with less side effects. And your medical staff right here on this team can help you with that. it was just very dispassionate.
Wow.
And there were so many guys kind of like nodding their head, like, because as soon as you hear it, you know that, right? As I say that to you, and when Ben said it to me, like, I kind of already knew that. I knew that there were better ways to find sleep or appetite stimulant or pain reduction, right? But in my mind, I've heard all those things and read all those things over the years too, that marijuana does this. And so you're like, oh, geez, it's natural. It has these benefits. The studies on marijuana are relatively recent. And in his book, Marijuana Inc., he goes into the fact that, okay, a lot of the anecdotal stuff that we hear about marijuana is your parents' marijuana. And now the marijuana and the THC are 15 to 50 times more potent. So this is not your parents' marijuana, and you need to understand that people are manipulating this stuff, and you don't know what else is even in the THC and marijuana nowadays. It's a very, very dangerous drug.
Yeah, it really is, and I doubt you've seen this movie, and I always think of this. There's a movie called Pineapple Express. It was with Seth Rogen. It's a comedy, and it makes marijuana seem cool and fun and hip and all that stuff. What I actually took away from it now that I'm 30 – am I 38? I'm 38 now. I actually take away from it – the whole movie is just a bunch of stuff that they're screwing up throughout the entire movie. Yes, it's comical, but they're viewed as they're viewed as screw-ups. They're viewed as goofballs that are just can't get anything right, and their whole life is about to end, and all this stuff's going on. So now I point to some of those funny movies that we grew up, the Cheech and Chong's and all that, where it's like glorifying it a bit, and it's like, yeah, but do you want to be that guy, or do you want to be a football player? Do you want to be a finely tuned athlete that's dialed in mentally and physically, ready to prepare and make the best of your life, whether you go to the next level after college or not? Do you want to be that person that brings it every single day? You are absolutely locked in. And I think we talked about this over, I think, a couple of weeks ago with seeing some of these athletes and their strict workout regimen, their diet, the way they focus and stay away from a lot of that stuff. I think that those are the stories that if I'm a Division I athlete, I'm paying attention to. Do I want to be the goofball that they make a 2.5-hour movie about? Or do I want to be an inspiration to a lot of people and really just bring the best I can possibly bring?
It's so interesting. The play, as you've said before, we don't really prep for this show at any kind of a detailed level, and so where you're going with stuff, I'm trying to react, and you're doing the same. Each of these spots that you're going is where our players were going with Ben, and there came a point where it was like, okay, look, you can believe the science, choose not to, but let me tell you that you fill your life with your choices about things that make you feel good. Good about yourself, good physically, et cetera, right? You only have your bucket of things that feel good, and your time is only so much. If you want to have marijuana or other drugs in that bucket, go ahead. Something else is probably going to fall out.
And sure.
He didn't say those exact words. I can't remember what he said. You know, I'm paraphrasing an hour and a half that he spent with our team, but it was just so enlightening. I mean, one of our players, I don't want to say the name, of course, because it would kind of reveal a guy's, past struggles and more personal, but one of our players actually stayed in touch with him and proposed a pretty significant presentation in one of his classes. And then referenced back and worked with Ben on that presentation.
Wow!
And this is a guy who had really struggled, and the ups and downs of his football and academics and social life and just everything was kind of a mess for a long time. And as far as this player's approach and what he's going to accomplish. I believe certainly odds are he'll be the most improved guy in the program.
I think that the right there is a very unique story too. What some guys can really take from that and can really use that as a jumping off point and decide to investigate further. Mm-hmm. Again, you're going to get the science, you're going to get the facts, but like you said, sometimes guys are just going to make those decisions. They're going to put that into their life. What are they dropping out? And I suppose it's up to that person to then do the legwork, start investigating what that looks like. I know for me personally, even if I have let's just take the alcohol thing. If I have a couple of beers, I don't like to read. I love to read. Mm. If I have a couple of beers in my brain, I'm like, I can't really retain what's going on. My mind's going off into different places. So now suddenly I'm dropping out one of the things I love and it makes me feel productive and all those things. But if you go on a stretch of that, you start to cancel out some of the things that you love. Maybe if you do that stuff, you don't feel as good in the morning to go exercise. And this is probably not just for football players, but for every human being out there. When you choose some of those things, and I know that's what you've been passionate about, it can really drop off a lot of those really constructive things that when you're 90, when you're 80, you look back and go, man, I wish I would have done more of those things rather than focus on the things that make me feel good for a couple of hours a night.
Yeah, it's so true. And, I don't think either one of us want to come off as like preachy or perfect. One of the reasons I'm super passionate about helping players and giving them the rationale, the science, preaching in terms of the short window of their life right now. One of the reasons I'm so passionate about that is I felt like I, peed away some of my youth. I'm not proud of every decision I've made, but have owned it in front of these players and told them about my setbacks and my breakthroughs. And that I'm not coming from an area of judgment. I'm not coming from a place of judgment about them, their habits, their decisions. What I'm coming from is I want the best for them. And at some point in our time together, I don't really give up on guys very quickly, but at some point, if it's just too much of a struggle, if I continue to want more for you than you want for you, then as far as the team goes, which my priority, I love each one of these guys as individuals, but my priority has to be the team. And if one guy has to have a consequence of losing a scholarship or losing a spot on the depth chart or any other consequence that might flow from poor decisions, if that affects the other one, because we got 120 guys, if one guy's misfortune you know, positively affects or sends an example to the other 119 on the team, then it can be a good thing out of a bad thing.
You know, just one more side note, and you know, in sports or out in the real world, just dealing with businesses and stuff, I'm shocked at how many people I come across. They're like, I'm doing, what do they call it now? It's like a 70, they're going 70 days or something like that, where they're not touching alcohol, they're not touching marijuana. And you'll talk to them in this stretch, and suddenly there is a light about them. Like, they've been exercising more, their eyes are clear, they're just alert, they're ready to go. And they will tell you, a lot of these guys, I'm not saying they all stick with it after 70 days or whatever, but there's a lot of guys that I know have really struggled, and suddenly they're different people just focusing on that. And these guys aren't like drug. It's not like every day. Yep. They're not drinking every day. They're not using marijuana every day. They're doing it enough, though, where it's making them feel not so great about what they're accomplishing every single day. And I think that part's fascinating, too. If you really are serious about something, I've seen several celebrities and athletes that have come out and say, once I gave up that, whether it's marijuana, alcohol, or something more severe, that's when I was able to become the best actor or the best singer. I put the best stuff of my life out there. I think a lot of sports figures would say the exact same thing.
Sure. What are you willing to give up? Goes back to that bucket that we all have, right? What are you willing to give up?
Sure. Another one in the NCAA. I wanted to get your take on this one, and we'll get into more UNC specifics too in a moment, Coach. But this was a fun conversation to have because I think the NIL world is fascinating, so I enjoy talking about it. Not that I agree with every single thing that goes down, but this one yesterday, to me, crosses a really obvious line. I mean, I'm at the point now where, and I think a lot of people are, when the NCAA is getting sued for something, there might be a good chance they're going to lose that. At least some of these big stories we've had pop up. But this one, I don't know. Mario Chalmers and several other players. Obviously, Mario Chalmers was a Kansas superstar. He hit a three-pointer with 2.0 seconds left to tie Memphis back in 2008. They used that highlight, among many other highlights, to promote March Madness. We see the same thing with college football. Great plays are promoted before the season starts. We're going to see it. Well, basically, Chalmers and a bunch of other players are getting together with the law firm, and they're going to sue the NCAA for using those highlights without him getting any money or any compensation for that. And that crosses into the media law world of things too, where, I mean, and this is where I want to pick your brain on this. When you're signing up to be a college athlete, aren't you aware that we're going to be filming you. Every game is going to be filmed in some capacity, whether it's just by our guys, and that could potentially be used to promote the program. That's your footage. It's your cameras that's filming the guy. He signed up to play and put on a uniform for your school.
Yep. Don't know Mario. Don't know those who are advising him. But I do know here's a couple of things that have just been coming down the pipe now for a long time. The NCAA was behind for many, many years. I mean, they're preemptively striking against student athletes getting an inflated wage by not allowing anybody to work. When I was in college, you could not work as a scholarship athlete. You could not have any job as a scholarship athlete during the school year because the NCAA was so concerned that some booster somewhere was going to give somebody an easy job and pay them too much money. That's ridiculous, looking back on it now, right? Like, what? That's not American to preemptively strike at something that could happen, right? Like, we all have the freedoms to break the laws every day, and that's part of, you know, being an American.
Sure.
I think. So,
yep, great point.
And the NCAA is kind of still running from some of that past and some of that history, and so, and now you've got the NIL, and now there's a realization amongst players, and Mario and these other guys are realizing, oh, hey, they're using my name, image, and likeness. Okay, well. Yeah, as this moves quickly into the future, I think lawsuits like this are important because I think that universities and the NCAA or whoever the eventual governing body is going to be of college sports, these players do need to be educated right up front. The same way that you or I are, or anybody that joins a business, like our efforts in that arena, our efforts are owned by the university or by the bowl game or by the NCAA tournament, the television partner who's paid all that money. And if you don't like it, again, you have the freedom not to do it, right? But But the idea that anytime you appear anywhere that you should be compensated for it by video, I mean, that to me is one step away from the absurdity of saying, well, this person watched me. He yeah. owes me money. This person paid right. his ticket to the game. He watched me make that shot and he owes me money now. Because I didn't get any of that money back then. I mean, it's absurd.
If I'm at practice, if I'm at a UNC football practice and I take a picture of one of your players or I video something that you've given me permission to, like maybe you'll say this is a closed session, we don't want any photos or videos, and I need to follow that rule or I lose my credentials or worse. But if you're saying, hey, it's open, you can film this stuff, whatever, and then I use that to promote coverage of the whole show or KFKA, my understanding is that's – I was given permission by the school to film that. If I'm a random fan that's walking by campus and I want to watch practice, don't I own that now? I mean, again, media people, you do have a responsibility. We have to follow your rules as far as what we can film, when we can film it, what we can record. But once you give us the green light, isn't that our stuff? And if we were to use that to promote our media coverage, that seems like that's fair game.
And wouldn't you have an even stronger case had you paid for the rights?
Well, yeah,
to video and broadcast that, and that's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, what are we going to do now? Is it Chalmers and players like this? Again, there's several players in this. We're going to start suing every fan that's ever gone to a game and filmed something. I mean, guys go to concerts and film the concerts that they're at, and then they post that on video. This is getting to the – this one where is where I went obviously right off the bat. I said there's no way they can win this one, right? The NCAA, CBS, whatever, they make it – hey, this is our way of promoting this sport. If we get to the point where we can't use highlights without paying, we won't use highlights. Then we won't promote the stuff as much, meaning not as many fans are going to get as excited about it. Ultimately, not as many fans are going to watch it. More money goes out the window, and suddenly we get less and less scholarships and NIL deals. It's a might be a long process, but that's where we're headed if we start doing stuff like this.
We were just talking about a few moments ago, you know, performance enhancers and performance detractors. Well, how about name, image, and likeness enhancers, name, image, and likeness detractors? And you want to start, you know, forcing people to pay more than the value than the current value. For your name, image, and likeness or some highlights that you had, your name, image, and likeness may be suffer a serious detraction
yeah.
at that point. The value of your name, image, and likeness is going to go down significantly. So like I said, I think all of this is really good. I think if Mario and other players who are kind of feeling this same type of thing, if they do win at some level in this case, it's going to be because the simple contract law for student athletes – is way behind. Like we don't give them any of this information when they sign a national letter of intent. It has nothing to do with any of that name, image, and likeness, and the fact that the university and or our broadcast partners now own a certain you know percentage or they have a share in your name, image, and likeness. None of that is communicated right now. And so from that standpoint, I can see where there's confusion, and it could just be a cleaner process along the way. So maybe this is eventually going to be really good just for the education of these student athletes.
Yeah, and I guess as we turn this more and more into like a job with what we're doing with NIL and who knows where this will go in 5 to 10 years. But it's like here at the station, we sign contracts. And in those contracts, it's like things that you produce here, it's KFKA. You're not – if I produce this podcast and then I get fired tomorrow and then I go to a different station and say, Coach, come on over – we're going to do Football 52. I have to call it something different. I have to change the name. Can't use any of the past podcasts or anything like that. It would have to be a brand new thing. But the understanding is that I'm under the umbrella of this media organization. And so everything I put out is part of this media organization. And I think that that probably needs to be clarified, I guess. Maybe that's the thing we take away from this is in those letters and in those signings. It's, hey, when you put on the uniform, we're going to film games, and if you have a spectacular catch, ultimately that could be promoted for the school, for the conference, for the NCAA as a whole. I do get, though, for example, like a Van Shield, if UNC says, hey, we're going to put a billboard up to promote the football season, and we'd like to use your face, you up there on the billboard. I can see where Van could – not saying he has or any of this has ever actually come up. I could see where a player says, okay, how much am I getting for that? And that's up to the school then to go, is it worth it to put this guy's face up on a billboard? But the video stuff completely different story.
Yeah, and now you're talking about education, right? Because if the university says, Van, we're going to pay you $1 for that.
Yeah.
And Van says, that's not enough. And then they go to another player and say, we're going to give you $1, bro. You're our second choice. And they put his name up there. His name, image, and likeness, he didn't get a lot of money for that. But his name, image, and likeness value just probably increased, right? Because now he's on a billboard. And I just think that education, those conversations are so critical. You and I kind of brainstormed and came up with this idea to do this podcast over a cup of coffee. Immediately, we knew exactly what we needed to do with our respective employers to make this happen, right? I had to go talk. I had to go disclose. You did the same thing. We knew the pitfalls. Our student athletes aren't educated to that level yet. It's nowhere in writing. I know where to find the stuff for me that's in writing that I need to do to protect the university when I do something like this or any other thing where I'm out in the public eye. And I think it's critical that we just move forward for these players and educate them on what their responsibilities and, on the other side, rights are.
Do you think that there's a chance that this Chalmers thing, like they could actually win this thing or something? Because if they do, then I think that opens up this big old can of worms where now players from all over the place are going to be suing for any time there was ever a highlight used.
Right. Yeah. Even like a marginal player like me, there are. I was in some big games and on the field in some big moments. There's moments that I was that are still shown on ESPN or whatever. I come across ESPN Classic sometimes, and some of those games I played in at BYU. We had a kickoff classic victory over a ranked Texas A&M team. We had a Cotton Bowl victory over that came down to the last minute. Both of those games over Kansas State. I was on the field in some of those moments. I've never thought anything other than, oh my gosh. Check it out. I'm still on TV, 20 years later.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So I can't relate because I'm not Mario Chalmers. I didn't do something amazing, and my name isn't kind of a household name that from my playing days. So I don't know what that feels like. But I can just say I can't imagine that the broadcast company that paid rights for that doesn't have some rights to use the footage as well. So
yeah,
it's just strange.
They're videoing it. They're producing it. I think of let's use a UNC basketball player, for example, Langston Reynolds under Steve Smiley's crew. That guy's been on the top 10 plays like two or three times maybe. And I joked with him when I had him on the air the first time it happened. I'm like, okay, seriously, how many times have you watched that? And he's like 400,000 times, man. I love it. So I'm thinking to myself with this story, okay, now does Langston Reynolds have a case against ESPN now for airing that? And obviously knowing him, I don't know him extremely personally, but that guy was like, this is the coolest thing in the history of the world. If we go down this path, goodbye top 10. Goodbye UNC getting on the map or these other local schools getting on the map for an awesome night after an amazing play if you can't use any of the highlights and things like that. You watch a Sports Center and you see the recaps of these games. Are players now going to say, oh, you used me to tell the story of how that game went down. I want some money. There's just no way.
Yeah, I think we all inherently agreed when we stepped on the court or on the field, we inherently agreed that video was going to be used for a myriad of different purposes. And it's just kind of in terms of the statute of limitations and what the implied contract was, and that is part of law, as I understand it, the implied contract. I just don't think there's a case there, but it'll be really interesting to see. And I do hope that it sparks a little bit of change where the powers that be, in the administrative position say, okay, well, how can we make sure that there's not somebody, 20 years from now who is confused and looking back about, what they felt like that they should have been owed?
I would hate to be like the legal team at the NCAA, involved with the NCAA. I mean, you have to be so specific in every single thing you do. And I'm not saying the NCAA has done everything right or wrong, but now it's gotta take forever to get new bylaws put in, and because you have to look 30 years down the road and go, okay, are we potentially going to get in trouble for that? Not to say that they haven't done some of that stuff in the past, but now more than ever with these kind of stories popping up left and right, you have to do your due diligence. You have to do your examination so thoroughly of every single thing that could happen.
It opens up a lot of doors. I mean, there are cameras on us everywhere. How many times just in my trip over here to the studio was I on camera? a traffic camera, somebody's front door.
You were on the front door camera here, Coach. Right. Yeah. When you ring the doorbell,
and
it pops up.
So what is the ownership that I have if something, if I were to fall down and it becomes viral or something and you put it out there, do I have rights to anything that you've made? It doesn't seem right to me. It especially doesn't seem right if I went and performed knowing that you already had rights and had bought the rights to broadcast this.
It's wild.
Yeah.
It's all just a wild story. So that, like I said, that story, it's fun. When I say fun, it's just an intriguing conversation. There's so many of these things that are popping up that we didn't think we were going to be discussing even 5, 10, 20 years ago. But here we are having these deep discussions about what that ultimately looks like. And yet we got a few more big ones that popped up. Like I said, it's not really a slow – it hasn't been a slow summer. It really hasn't with a lot of the news coming up. For you guys, Coach, what's coming up? I know we want to talk a little bit about the summer bridge, the Bridge Kids. It sounds like a book that you might have read growing up, the Bridge Kids.
It could be a book by the time that each of these summer sessions is over. But all of our freshman signees, we put them in an academic – we call it a bridge program to kind of bridge some good quality college-level academic habits into this first fall semester. And so we bring them in June and start to train the guys, but also put them in some classes that gets them a little bit ahead from a credit standpoint and from a GPA standpoint. But also it gives us a chance to monitor, how self-sufficient is this student athlete in their studies. And so if a guy falters a little bit in this bridge program, it's a real indicator of, we're going to need some more support. And it's usually just study habits. All of our guys are intelligent enough to do the work. And in fact, student athletes as a whole and football players on average are coming in with higher GPAs and test scores than the general student population, right? So they're highly capable, but they're also competitive guys, they're getting into a competitive environment in the weight room and in training, and they've got a lot of new decisions and freedoms that maybe they didn't have when they were living with their parents. So it is a time for adjustment, and it's really nice that we can make some of these assessments in a point where we're not in the middle of the football season and have a lot of different distractions going on.
No, I think it's awesome because, like you said, once you get into the season, then you got all students on campus too. It's a wild world for any college student when they start up. So, but then when you have to be that Division I athlete, plus all the other things that come with being a college student, kind of having a little a little preview type period, I suppose, before you get into the season. It's got to be huge for these young guys.
Yes, and it's really fun for me. So typically I lift and train with the veteran guys, right? Because the bridge guys are on kind of a almost like a remedial. They've done this stuff before, but they've got to learn the way that we move and the standards of our strength and conditioning staff. And so they start out pretty slow, these bridge guys, in terms of their training, and then they get ramped up pretty fast. But this last week, our veteran guys are on our discretionary period for the 4th of July week. It's one of our designated discretionary weeks. So they can travel home. There's no mandatory lifts. The weight room is open to them, and they can use it at their discretion. And we give them the plan in writing, and so they can follow it as they choose. But the Bridge Kids academics are still going on. They still have classes. And so this last Monday, Tuesday, and then today, Wednesday, I'll be leaving here to go and train with them. And it's been pretty fun because you can already see some of the good habits and bad habits start to separate themselves. And so yesterday I was like the crotchety old guy. I'm actually doing the workout, so I can't stop everything and say, hey, I want to give you guys a lecture. So I'm just yelling out as I'm lifting because I'm seeing things, right? But I'm struggling myself. But I noticed some guys going to the bathroom, right? I'm like, hey, this is my 30th year of coaching college football. I can count on one hand how many times guys have gone to the bathroom during a football game. But here today, we got four guys that went to the bathroom during the lift. I've got to be yelling this out as I'm doing reps, right? And then these are not good habits. It could happen to me. I could end up in the bathroom tomorrow. It could happen to anybody once. But let's not make this a goofy habit. Take care of yourself. You guys are like kindergartners,
While I'm lifting,
yeah. And so they're looking at me like – because they don't know me well yet. And so the veterans know at this point that, I'm serious and there's some truth to what I'm saying. And I want these guys to, really prepare your body so that you can come and train for an hour and a half. without having to check out, right? Like you, if you miss time in our weight room, you're missing sets and reps. And there's no way to make that up because everybody else is moving on, right? So but I don't think the freshman guys know that I also am human and I do make mistakes and I may end up in that bathroom at some point. You know, it's like it can happen to anybody at any time. And so they've still got to get to know me in that way. Like I'm here for you. I'm trying to motivate you. I'm trying to call you out all at the same time. Sometimes that's a little uncomfortable and you know, it's where I want to live is slightly making you uncomfortable.
You're not going to drink water before this next workout, I'm guessing, because you're like, I can't go to the bathroom now. I have to be there for this one.
Yeah. Some of these guys I want, you know, now they're paranoid, right? Or they're calling home and be like, Coach Lamb, it doesn't even let us go to the bathroom, you know, and then I got to field calls. I mean, I because I'm there and have my adrenaline going, I say goofy stuff that I have to retract sometimes. Like, you know, like a player will offer me some water and I'm trying to show toughness. And in my day, you weren't supposed to drink water during practice. That was considered toughness. Yeah. And that's how you train. And so I still have that ingrained in me. And I caught myself the other day saying, I only drink water once a week, whether I need to or not, you know, and then I just thought, okay, the trainer's like in earshot right now, and she's going to turn me in. So I was like, just kidding.
Just kidding.
You guys should be drinking all the water you can. It's important to hydrate. And I'm like, I got to find my groove here.
I absolutely love that. Guys. That story's great. I think that's fantastic. Because again, you know, even when I was in high school, it was your water's a reward. You know, you'll go get water when you guys finish all this stuff. And we're like, that was not that long. I mean, it was kind of long ago, sadly. But that was kind of a way of thinking, too. Obviously, that's changed. So I got to imagine that's difficult sometimes.
You want to talk about nasty. When I was a high school football player, and we had two-a-days. There were really three-a-days back then because we had a third session of kind of skelly or 7-on-7. But we had no water breaks. There was no water anywhere around practice. But one of the, you know, junior staffers would bring out a cooler full of crushed ice about halfway through practice during the hottest part of August in training camp. And I grew up in a hot area of California. And so, you know, it's 100 degrees. We're all filthy. You didn't play on turf back then. You played on grass and dirt, right? And now everybody goes in with their bare, sweaty hand, their muddy hand, or their gloved hand, and takes a handful of ice out of the same bucket over and over and over. And you've got 100 guys out of this one bucket.
Yeah.
And you know, even if you're the fifth guy, but like the 80th guy to put your hand in this bucket.
It's black ice now. It's dirt all in there. It's all covered up.
And then finding out years later that ice actually like somehow dehydrates you because your body has to work to melt it, and it uses more moisture than it actually gives you or something like that. You know, I've come across stuff like this, and so I'm texting with my old teammates. What were they doing to us?
Well, we had the It was like you'd hook up a hose to this little sprinkler thing, and we were like cattle. You know, you'd go up and they'd have like, I don't know, 20 little nozzles coming out of this. It's like a sprinkler basically, but it has legs. It's standing up, so you just kind of bend over.
I know what you're talking about.
And we all just, you know, a lot of guys, they get their mouths around that thing.
Completely.
And it's just all over it, and you didn't think anything of it because you are you're sweating so much.
Yeah.
It's just water. I remember one time it was just hot water. For some reason, it was warm water coming out, and most of the guys were like, oh my gosh, this is really hot water. And one guy was just a tough dude. He's like, it's wet. It doesn't matter. Just go. And they're sucking on this thing. And yeah, you think back to that, and you're like, boy, there are probably different ways we could have done things, I suppose, at that point. But, you know, it made us interesting.
I haven't thought about that cattle trough waterer sprinkler, giant sprinkler design for so long. But because of what me and my teammates went through in high school, I actually went to college with one of the guys, and we became roommates and are still really good friends. We played, you know, high school ball together and then college ball together. And I can remember us talking about that, like, check this out. Look at this water. Like 20 guys can drink from this at the same time. And we'd never been given water in practice. So it was just considered like this huge luxury.
It was awesome.
Yes.
When we saw him pull that thing out, it's like, oh, we're just going to be able to run over there and just take some drinks. And here we go. And now you look back. Yeah, wild times. Coach, always appreciate these. You said it last week that once we hit the 4th of July, we kind of start turning almost into that. We're getting into that season mode. This is the last month without a football game because you guys play on the last day of August. So this is our last month without a football game of doing these podcasts, if you can believe that.
I can. It's on the march. Our players are talking about it more. Our staff is talking about it more. There's just, I think, a concentration of the mind that occurs for everybody in this organization, in our football organization, and deadlines do that. We've all felt that, right? Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's even some research out there that procrastination is not always the absolute sin of preparation. That sometimes, as you get closer to a deadline, the mind concentrates and you become more creative or more diligent or better at what you're preparing. And I can feel that coming right now. And I know a lot of our players can too, and our coaches. It's an exciting time.
August 31st, Incarnate Word, first game of the season for the UNC Bears. Episode 23 coming up next week, Coach. We'll look forward to that conversation as always. And we'll just wish you best of luck for the rest of the week. And happy, it's the third as we do this, so happy Independence Day. Happy 4th of July to you and your family and the entire organization there over at UNC.
Yes, to everybody out there. Thank you.
All right, Coach. We'll catch up with you next week.